7 p.m., featuring a Middle Eastern menu along with hot soup, Turkish coffee, and herbal teas. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Here's a quick look at something that's been happening in the sports world at this time. St. Louis pitcher Chris Carpenter is slated to be back in action when the Cardinals face the Chicago Cubs at Busch tonight. Carpenter was off to a strong start when he strained a muscle in his rib cage while batting in his second start on the 14th day of April. And then he was placed on the disabled list. The 2005 National League Cy Young Award winner has allowed an earned run and five hits while striking out nine and walking two in 10 innings so far this season. The Chicago Cubs, by the way, are hoping to get back on track tonight. They've lost two in a row after winning five straight. Chicago will hand the ball to Ryan Dempster against the St. Louis Cardinals. He's 3-2 this season with a 4.65 ERA, and he's 4-4. In 13 career starts against the Cardinals. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell's stance on former Atlanta Star quarterback Michael Vick has not changed, even as Vick's location has. Goodell reiterated today, shortly after Vick left a federal prison in Kansas, that no reinstatement talks will commence until the entirety of Vick's sentence is completed. Goodell said he will talk to Vick, to other people, and have a background check done before he makes any ruling. Vick will serve about 2 months of home confinement in Virginia, and he's scheduled to complete that on the 20th day of July. He's currently on indefinite suspension from NFL because, of course, of his involvement in the dogfighting ring.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designer of the Carl Foundation's Echo Building, on the web at ratioarchitects.com.
This is the Afternoon Magazine from WILL AM 580. You know, for many small town mayors, growth is all good. After all, more houses mean more tax revenue and more retail and more jobs. One Alabama mayor agrees, but he also recognizes green space isn't an amenity worth keeping, and for that, the timing couldn't be better. Gigi Duban reports.
Here at the grand opening of a subdivision in Trustville, Alabama, a few dozen families gather outside the sales office for the usual ribbon cutting with giant scissors. Soon, everyone heads down to the Cahaba River. The river literally will be in the backyard of these houses once they're built. On the river, they're having a rubber duck race. It's gimmicky, but these days developers will do just about anything to attract potential buyers. Another developer had approached Trustville about building homes along the Cahaba River, but then the housing market took a nosedive. The developer wanted out. Trustville Mayor Gene Melton says the city would have been crazy not to buy the land.
This property was going to probably sell for $35,000 or $40,000 an acre. And we got to the point where we were able to acquire this for $4,500 an acre.
The city could have turned it into an industrial park or zoned it for retail, but instead they'll turn it into a greenway. It'll connect to nearby parks with the river as the centerpiece. Now, the mayor of Trustville is not a staunch environmentalist by any measure. He tools around the city in a gas-guzzling SUV. He's pro-development. But he says the same way a city needs development, it needs green space, too.
Have you ever flown into a big city like Atlanta or Los Angeles, and for miles and miles, all you see is rooftops? That's how not to build a city.
The Cahaba River watershed stretches through Alabama's most populous county. Recently, heavy development along the Cahaba has polluted the water. It's endangered habitats not just here, but downstream. Trustville is very near the headwaters, so what happens there affects the entire river. Randall Haddock is thrilled about the new green space. He's a field director with the Cahaba River Society, a conservation group. Haddock says the Cahaba River is among the most biologically diverse in the country.
It turns out that Alabama has more fish species, more snails, more crayfish, more turtles, more than any other state in the U.S.
Haddock says all along the Cahaba, he's seen plenty of examples of how not to build near the river. He says this green space is an example of how easy it is to minimize impact. Keeping grass on the ground not only means a cleaner river, but it might help reduce flooding. The bank erodes. The water is polluted, and soon you start to see species diminish.
When you make so many hard surfaces, the water runs off real fast and gets into the river real quick, and you've increased the volume of water, and the only response the river can make is to get bigger.
That is a, that's a little dam to block.
David Dobbs is the city's high school environmental science teacher. He takes his students out behind the school to check on the river. The result? a clean bill of health.
All the little bugs, they end up being food for the fish. And the more they are of the good ones that are here, that means there's more food for the fish, so therefore there's more fish. It's a very healthy part of the river.
Trustville, like many small towns, still says without growth, there'd be no city. But now they know that growth has to protect one of its top amenities, the river. For the Environment Report, I'm Gigi Duban.
And I'm Todd Gleason in the radio studios here on campus at the Urbana-Champaign at the University of Illinois. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Here's what the weather forecast for Champaign and Urbana looks like this afternoon. Sunny, breezy, warmer, the high of 83. The wind from the south at 10 to 20 miles an hour with some higher gusts. As our own meteorologist Ed Kieser says, tonight should be clear, low of 54. The wind from the south at 6 to 12 miles an hour. And tomorrow, sunny, the high of 84. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, a low of 58. Friday, mostly sunny, the high of 82. And Friday night, partly cloudy, low of 59. Saturday, intervals of clouds and some sunshine. Saturday, a high of 81. And we'll have a good day on that day. Well, higher education comes at a high cost, but how much is too much? A new requirement at Western Illinois University is sparking some discussion about that issue. Joseph Wagner has the story.
The broadcasting department will require all incoming freshmen to buy a laptop. The department is also requiring students to purchase video and audio editing software that will be used throughout the degree program. There is no doubt these tools can greatly help students, but there is a concern.
Sticker shock.
Broadcasting professor Roger Sadler says the price tag might be too much for some students and their families.
We're going to drive away some good students who might otherwise choose to come here. That really is a major addition to your college bill. I mean, once you've paid tuition and everything, then you discover to be a broadcasting major, oh, I have to add $3,000 more to my bill. Well, that may not be a big deal for some families, but I think it's going to be a big deal for a lot of students, a lot of families.
Even though students currently enrolled in the department are not expected to buy the laptop and software, they still have opinions on the requirement.
I think it's unfair because it's just they're asking them to spend too much money and it shouldn't be a requirement.
I think it's a good idea only because they're going to have it be able to do their own work on their own time and a more, you know, sophisticated atmosphere, maybe don't have to worry about the crowds of trying to get into a Mac lab.
I think it would be foolish to make freshmen buy a MacBook Pro and then they find out they don't even like the major.
The reason for the high price tag is because the department expects students to buy a MacBook Pro. It costs around $2,000. Toss in the cost of software and the price tag approaches $3,000. The broadcasting department chose such an expensive laptop because it offers a number of benefits. Macs are considered fail-safe. This means students can go through their college career without having to worry about their computer crashing. In addition, some of the software is considered the standard in the industry.
We use Mac primarily because of the video software that we use, and that's that is Final Cut Pro, and that is what most of the industry is using these days, and that only runs on a Mac.
Sam Etzel's a broadcasting professor. He teaches video production classes. Etzel feels it will be easier to teach students if they have the software on their own computers.
And that's the beauty of it, is that they'll have the same material I'll have, and we're going to walk through the process together. It would be an absolute shame for them to invest this kind of money in the hardware and the software and then blow it during class time, not learning how to use it.
Sharon Evans is Associate Dean of the College of Fine Arts and Communication. She says the plan is for students to get certified in Final Cut.
There are a lot of students who may know Final Cut Pro, but how well they know Final Cut Pro is not evidenced by putting a line on your resume. This certificate will tell everyone, employers, internship supervisor, that these students really and truly know Final Cut Pro.
Evans hopes in 4 years, when the program is in full effect, there will be a noticeable improvement in the quality of work. She says the difference can be seen in schools that have already implemented laptop requirements, such as Missouri State and Southern Illinois University. Other schools, in addition to Western, are joining the list of those with such a requirement. For example, the journalism department at Eastern Illinois University expects its students to buy a MacBook Pro for the fall. They will also need to buy Final Cut Pro and an Adobe package that includes Audition and Photoshop. Dean of Journalism James Tidwell says this will help journalism students edit stories on the fly.
Journalists are, you know, doing these sorts of things, the general things that journalists do,
and doing them, you know, on laptops, you know, in the field, you know, whether they're on an airplane or whether they're, you know, in the middle of a battlefield, and, you know, in a war or whatever it might be, at a ball game or whatever it is. So that's one thing. So just to get them used to that sort of activity.
Tidwell hopes this will prepare Eastern students for a job after college. As for Western Sam Etzel, he understands the kind of sacrifice students are making for higher education.
My own personal situation, I had to devote 4 or 6 years of my time in the military so I could afford to go to college. So higher ed does require sacrifice. It requires a sacrifice of your resources. It requires a sacrifice of time. It requires a lot of effort.
Etzel feels the sacrifice students make will be worth it. He hopes after the initial sticker shock, the students realize it's not just a computer they are investing in, but their future. Joseph Wagner, reporting.
Let's take a look at what's coming up on the world this afternoon at 3 o'clock Central Time. Canada's large Tamil population has mixed reactions to Sri Lanka's defeat of the Tamil Tiger rebels. Also, an eyewitness account of pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi's latest trial in Myanmar, and a conversation with Yusuf Islam. He's the man once known as Cat Stevens, about his return to the music that first brought him fame. Those stories and so much more will come up today on The World right here on WILL AM 580. Up next, the Department of Interior includes agencies such as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Park Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and many other bureaus, services, and offices. Former Senator Ken Salazar directs it all. Lester Graham recently talked with the Secretary of Interior about the department and the problems and challenges he faces.
Interior is a huge department with many services and bureaus. Some of those offices deal with oil and gas exploration on public lands in places such as Alaska and Utah and offshore. During the Bush administration, the Department of Interior was criticized for being too cozy with the oil and gas industry, and it culminated in a scandal involving oil company execs, government workers, and wild parties, complete with cocaine and sex. Secretary Salazar stressed to me, those days of partying and sweetheart deals with gas and oil companies are over.
It is unfortunate that the department was blemished during the Bush era because of the transgressions which occurred here, and the paradigm which unfolded, which we are seeing the results of today, is that there was a bending of the rules and the flaunting of the law. There's a lot of cleaning up that has to be done.
Recently, you came to a memorandum of understanding with FERC about offshore wind turbines. How soon might we see wind turbines off the coasts of the U.S.?
You know, I expect that it will happen during the first term of the Obama administration. I think that there is huge potential for wind energy off the shores, especially of the Atlantic, because of the shallowness of those waters.
Will we ever see a point where we have windmills near coast and drilling rigs out farther along the Atlantic coast?
I do believe that we will see the wind potential developed. I think it will be similar to what we already see in the United Kingdom and Denmark and Norway. With respect to oil and gas off the Atlantic, I think that's still a question that needs to be looked at, and it's part of what we're doing in looking at a new 5-year plan for the Outer Continental Shelf. We are not making a decision at this point or prejudging where we will end up after we complete the comment process, which ends in September.
Secretary Salazar says domestic oil and gas will play a role in American energy. He talked about the Department of Interior's role in the nation's energy independence and noted the department's 15,000 scientists will be helping deal with the big issues such as global warming and climate change. Ken Salazar says since the National Park Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and other nature-related agencies make up Interior, one of its top priorities is a program called Treasured Landscapes.
I am hopeful that we will be able to, in this administration, create the kind of legacy that was created by Teddy Roosevelt. President Obama has a vision for the landscapes of America, which is one that I believe we can deliver on. The restoration of major landscapes such as the Chesapeake Bay and the Great Lakes, the Everglades, and so many others will be a part of that agenda.
Secretary Salazar, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Lester.
Ken Salazar is President Obama's Secretary of the Interior. For the Environment Report, I'm Lester Graham.
In Miami, where do sex offenders go after prison? Local politicians have sent some under a bridge.
62 guys and a woman living in just disgusting circumstances. This is a camp created by public policy.
The tent community beneath a highway and the debate over where sex offenders can live. That's today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.
Earth and Sky.
Wednesday, May 20th, 2009. If you looked outside before dawn this morning, you might have seen the waning crescent moon near the brightest of planets, Venus, in the eastern sky.
Venus and the moon will be even closer together Thursday morning. There's also a second planet, Mars, in the vicinity of Venus and the moon.
Venus, Mars, and the moon will make a beautiful and interesting triangle in Thursday morning's pre-dawn sky. Venus is the brightest star of this pre-dawn triangle. Mars is much fainter.
Venus orbits the sun one step closer than Earth. Mars orbits one step farther away. Venus is veiled by thick clouds made of sulfur dioxide. Just as earthly clouds contain raindrops of water, so the clouds of Venus contain droplets of sulfuric acid. The clouds of Venus have created a runaway greenhouse effect that make the surface of Venus hot enough to melt lead.
Meanwhile, Mars is relatively hospitable, an intriguing destination for our spacecraft. Although it's generally colder, the temperature range on Mars isn't very different from Earth. Its day is about the same length as ours. Mars is the world most like Earth in our solar system, and you can peer at it Thursday before dawn when it'll be the fainter of the two planets near the moon. I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Let's take a look at the weather forecast. It says today, from our own Ed Kieser, sunny and warm skies across the two-state region. Highs will range from 80 in southeastern Indiana to 85 in the northern parts of Illinois. A brisk wind from the south and low humidity levels will lead to fast drying rates tonight. Clear skies.